Good evening. In the news tonight, a look at the legacy of the revolutionary icon Fidel Castro. The 2016 election recount is moving forward in swing states. And even with the cold of winter and in order to evacuate, water protectors and Sioux tribes are standing strong in protest over the Dakota Access Pipeline in North Dakota. With these and other stories in New York, I'm Linda Perry, and this is some of the news for Monday, November 28, 2016. Cubans are in Revolution Square in Havana today for the start of week-long services to say goodbye to the charismatic leader of Cuba's revolution, Fidel Castro. And while across the globe people are expressing condolences, it seems that the U.S. media, for the most part, took its lead from President-elect Trump. It engaged in a broadcast and print orgy of Cold War rhetoric, proclaiming Fidel a tyrant and a dictator who had oppressed the Cuban people for more than half a century. This after a tweet from the president-elect. He asserted, "Fidel Castro's legacy is one of firing squads, theft, unimaginable suffering, poverty, and the denial of fundamental human rights." On the other hand, President Barack Obama was more diplomatic. He offered a hand of friendship to the Cuban people, noting that under his presidency, U.S.-Cuba relations have improved. Sally O'Brien has more on the death of Fidel. She offers a perspective on the iconic leader and reports on some of the global reactions to his passing. And Margaret Gilpin of Cuba in Focus also provides details on the days of mourning already in progress in Cuba.
On Friday evening at 10:29 p.m., Cuba's revolutionary leader, Fidel Castro Ruz, died at the age of 90. Within 3 hours, Cuban President and Fidel's brother and comrade, Raúl Castro, made the announcement on Cuban state television.
Querido pueblo de Cuba, con profundo dolor comparezco para informar a nuestro pueblo, a los amigos de nuestra América y del mundo, que hoy, 25 de noviembre del 2016, a las 10:29 horas de la noche, falleció el comandante en jefe de la Revolución Cubana, Fidel Castro Ruz.
Dear people of Cuba, with profound pain I come to inform our people and the friends of America and the world that today, the 25th of November at 10:29 p.m., the commander-in-chief of the Cuban Revolution, Fidel Castro Ruz, died.
En cumplimiento de la voluntad expresa del compañero Fidel.
As compañero Fidel wished, his remains will be cremated. In the early hours of Saturday the 26th, the funeral organizing committee will provide our people with detailed information about the posthumous homage
al fundador de la Revolución Cubana
that we will give to the founder of the Cuban Revolution.
Hasta la victoria, siempre.
By early morning, the news had spread throughout the world, with Telesur giving voice to the sentiments of millions in Latin America, Africa, Asia, and many communities in the United States. Quote, "The leader of the movement that won Cuban independence and champion of the global South has died in Havana," said the headline. Within an hour of Cuba's announcement, the news had garnered over 350,000 tweets. Ecuadorian President Rafael Correa tweeted, "A great one is gone. Long live Cuba. Long live Latin America." While Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro reminded everyone that, quote, "Fidel and Chavez built ALBA, Petrocaribe, and paved the way for the liberation of our people." Pakistani President Imran Khan spoke about Fidel's example for the world, quote, "Today the world lost an iconic revolutionary leader who liberated his nation from all vestiges of imperialism." And close ally of the Cuban Revolution, Bolivian President Evo Morales, in an emotional address said, quote, "Fidel is a teacher of revolutionaries, a great teacher in principles and values. The fight of Fidel," Morales said, "has been for the people of the world." And indeed, it was always the cause of the poor and oppressed throughout the world that Fidel Castro championed, as in his speech before the United Nations on September 26, 1960.
Do away with the philosophy of plunder, and you will have done away forever with the philosophy of war.
desaparezca la explotación de los países por los monopolios.
Do away with the colonies, wipe out the exploitation of countries by monopolies, and mankind will have reached a true era of progress.
In his condolence message, Namibia's president, Dr. Hage Geingob, spoke concretely of Cuba's internationalism. He taught us, Geingob said, that one can compromise on anything except one's principles. Our own victories and losses in the struggle for our independence against apartheid South Africa are inextricably linked to the international solidarity of the Cuban people. He ended, "May the Cuban people feel consoled by the knowledge that Comandante en Jefe Fidel Castro Ruz lived his life in service of the oppressed and for the self-determination of the Americas and Africa. His name will be entered in the annals of history as one of the greatest leaders of our epoch." For more than five decades, Fidel Castro nurtured a revolution won against all odds in January 1959 against U.S.-backed dictator Fulgencio Batista, who had laid the island nation at the feet of U.S. sugar barons, gangsters, and human exploiters. The revolutionary movement quickly formed a government, which the U.S. formally recognized. However, as later acknowledged, CIA plans were soon hatched to overthrow the new regime. On January 21st, Fidel Castro, speaking before 800,000 people in Havana, declared that Cubans wanted economic as well as political freedom. By February, Fidel had been appointed prime minister. The next month, AT&T, the telephone company, came under control of the revolutionary government, and elections were planned within 12 to 18 months. In an interview with CBS's Face the Nation, correspondent Stuart Novins pressed this issue, asking if all political parties could participate.
Of course, if we don't give free to all the political parties to organize, we are not a democratic country. We have fought for the democracy here and for the freedom.
Why will it be necessary to wait 18 months before free elections can be held?
Well, do you think it is good for the Cuba now, when all the people what want is peace, one is that the government repair the mistakes and the barbarity of the before government? Don't you believe that our country at least 1 year to work? If we give a free election tomorrow, we win, because we have almost all the people. We have now more people than in 18 years.
But do you feel that there would be trouble if free elections were held tomorrow in Cuba? Do you feel that you would rather have over a year in order to consolidate things before free elections are held?
I think it is good at about 18 months, not more and not less. Because, as you know, the political party need time for reorganizing.
It seems, however, that the fledgling government wasn't to have its time to consolidate. While the government was instituting reforms such as lowering rents and the costs of medicines, deprivatizing beaches, seizing and closing gambling casinos, on March 10th, the U.S. National Security Council met in secret to discuss ways to install another government in Cuba. After trips to the United States, including multiple meetings, Fidel returned home, and the government began agrarian reform. In August, acts of sabotage began to surface, and by October, planes from the U.S. have bombed sugar mills, and a plane full of passengers is machine-gunned from the air. Prime Minister Castro responds by forming a popular militia. By May 7, 1960, Cuba reestablishes relations with the Soviet Union. As reported Saturday in Telesur, for the next 48 years until resigning in 2008, Fidel led the tiny island nation to historic levels of development, leading the world in many social indicators, including literacy and public health rates. Fidel and his revolution sustained more than 50 years of attacks from the United States, at its peak during the Cold War, which still lives on today through the harsh economic blockade of the island. Following Fidel's death, the Council of State of the Republic of Cuba declared 9 days of mourning from November 26 until December 4th. Margaret Gilpin has more.
During those days, all public activities and shows are canceled. The flag will be flown at half-staff in public buildings and military facilities. The radio and television shall broadcast informative, patriotic, and historic programs. Also, the organizing commission of the Central Committee of the Party, the State, and the Government for the funeral honors for Commander-in-Chief Fidel Castro informed the population that on November 28th and 29th, from 9 a.m. until 10 p.m., at the Jose Martí Memorial in the Plaza of the Revolution, the population can go and pay their respects to their leader. On those same days and hours, in other locations all over the country, the localities to be announced, including in the capital city, all Cubans will have the possibility to pay tribute and sign a solemn oath to fulfill the ideals of the revolution expressed by the historic leader of that revolution on May 1st, 2000, as an expression of their resolve to continue their beliefs and to continue our socialism. On November 29th at 7 p.m., a mass rally will take place at Jose Martí Revolution Square in the capital city. On the next day, Fidel's ashes will be carried following the same route as the Caravan of Freedom of January 1959 to the province of Santiago de Cuba, arriving there on December 3rd. On that same day at 7 p.m., a mass rally will be held at the Antonio Maceo Square in Santiago, and Fidel's ashes will be entombed the following morning on December 4th at 7, also, at the Santa Ifigenia Cemetery. For Cuba in Focus, I'm Margaret Gilpin.
Finally, in 2000, Fidel Castro addressed hundreds of thousands standing before the statue of Jose Martí in Havana's Plaza de Revolución.
Revolución es sentido del momento histórico.
Revolution is the sense of the historic moment, is to change all which must be changed, is complete equality and liberty, is to be treated and treat others as human beings.
Es emanciparnos por nosotros mismos y con nuestros propios esfuerzos.
Is to emancipate ourselves by ourselves and with our own efforts. Is to challenge dominant powerful forces within the social and national scope and realm.
Es defender valores en los que se cree, al precio de cualquier sacrificio.
It is to defend values in which we believe at the price of any sacrifice. It is modesty, unselfishness, altruism, solidarity, and heroism. Is never to lie nor violate ethical principles.
Es convicción profunda de que no existe.
Is the profound conviction that there is no power in the world capable of destroying the strength of truth and ideas.
Revolución es unidad, es independencia.
Revolution is unity, it's independence, it's to fight for our dreams of justice, for Cuba, and for the world.
For WBAI News, I'm Sally O'Brien with Margaret Gilpin in New York.
From a recent trip to Cuba traveling with a peace and union delegation, I saw firsthand that the Cuban people in Cuba are a resilient people who want improvement to their lives, to the economy. They want an end to the crippling U.S. embargo, but they are steadfast in their pride of gains, like in medicine and in education, this brought by the Cuban Revolution. Here's cultural educator James Early on Dr. Ron Daniels' Vantage Point on WBAI this morning.
I think Cuba is going to be okay with dealing with Trump. I mean, they've dealt with 11 presidents of the empire. It's going to be tough, but they know how to live under toughness. They know how to do that with dignity and the demand for respect and to be self-determined. And so there will be a lot of twists and turns, but I think U.S. capital, the logic of U.S. capital is that they want in with the competition. And the Cubans have said all along, we want to struggle with the United States within the context of the Protocol of Nations, because up until Barack Obama and Raul Castro reached an agreement on diplomatic relations, the United States was the rogue state. It was outside the bounds of the Protocols of Nations.
And while President-elect Trump is threatening to end the détente with Cuba initiated by the Obama administration, there are Republicans on Capitol Hill and corporate leaders who see the continued engagement with Havana as good for American businesses. Today, JetBlue made its first flight from New York to Havana from JFK Airport. WBAI will have more on the death of Fidel and his legacy in days to come. And this is the news on WBAI in New York. Green Party candidate Dr. Jill Stein is spearheading a recount in three key swing states, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. David Cobb is campaign manager for Jill Stein, Ajamu Baraka.
We were approached by election integrity activists, cybersecurity experts, and other lawyers in the field early last week. With disturbing evidence of irregularities in these campaigns that include statistical anomalies. They include concerns around exit polling data and concerns around how razor-thin the margin was. And frankly, neither they nor we had confidence in the integrity of the reported results. So we are filing recounts in order to verify the vote. And Linda, I want to be very clear that the Stein campaign, myself personally, who filed a recount in Ohio in 2004 on behalf of the Green Party, we are not attempting to change any election result. We are, however, very concerned about just how vulnerable our voting system is and are filing these recounts in order to verify the reported results.
And David, misinformation is being spread by critics attempting to sully the recount effort regarding money raised to pay for it.
So I think it's worth pointing out, Linda, that over $6 million has been raised from small donor sources. I want to be really clear here. 140,000 donors. The average donor amount is $46. Of that entire $6 million, only 414 of those people gave $1,000 or more. That is 0.5%, or less than 0.5% of all of the donors. Nobody gave over $2,700 to that effort. This is the most miraculous display of spontaneous small donor activity that I think anybody has ever seen, including, for that matter, the Sanders campaign. So, you know, these allegations that are coming from both the Trump campaign and Clinton and Correct the Record and other sources are either misinformed or intentionally deceitful. This is a small donor campaign, and they will absolutely be publicly released as per Federal Election Commission regulations. And in fact, Linda, probably before, because as soon as we're actually through the flurry of pending legal deadlines that are closing quickly, we're going to circle back on that very question.
So can you just tell us about the deadlines as they're approaching? Where have you already filed?
We have already filed in Wisconsin, and we are headed into court because the Wisconsin Election Commission has already told us that they will not do the hand count that we believe is absolutely critical. So we filed in Wisconsin and are already about to begin litigating either today. Then we have a filing deadline in Pennsylvania today, Monday, and we are meeting those deadlines as quickly as we can. And then on Wednesday, there is a deadline in Michigan, which we are preparing for. Monday is today in Pennsylvania is particularly challenging because you don't you can't just file one statewide recount. You literally have to go precinct by precinct. So we are moving quickly on that front, filing all across the state in as many precincts as we possibly can.
And finally, these are states, swing states, where Trump won narrowly, aren't they?
Yes, absolutely. And that's part of the reason that these are not just places where Trump won narrowly. There are places where Trump won narrowly where he was not expected to win. And so that's what already raised the concerns of election integrity experts to make sure that they're verified. And a cursory examination of how those states conduct their elections give us another layer of concern.
So there have been reports that Hillary Clinton's campaign has joined your efforts, the Jill Stein efforts, for a recount.
Well, you know, as we know from WikiLeaks, the Clinton campaign has close ties to the corporate media, so it's not a surprise to me that that lie is being perpetrated on behalf of the corporate media. Let's be clear. The Clinton campaign has not, quote, joined the recount. If the Clinton campaign was quote, joining the recount, she and her campaign would file for a recount, and we would have a completely different legal posture. She has not even intervened in the case as of yet. She has merely said that she will send observers, which is not the same thing as joining the recount.
David Cobb is campaign manager for Jill Stein and Ajamu Baraka. You can find out more about Recount 2016 by going to jillstein2016.com. Find the Recount link. Also on that site, you can sign up to be an election observer. In other news, in North Dakota, water protectors continue to stand up against what is known as the Black Snake, the 1,172-mile-long Dakota Access Pipeline. This as the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has set up an early December deadline for the Standing Rock and Cheyenne River Sioux tribes and all water protectors to leave the encampment known as Ocheti Shekoni in North Dakota, where they have been protesting the pipeline for months. WBAI's Earth Mom has more.
Last week, the Army Corps sent a letter to Standing Rock Sioux Tribe leader Dave Archambault saying that all federal lands north of the Cannonball River will be closed to public access December 5th for safety concerns. The order includes the Ocheti Shekoni, or Seven Council Fires Camp. That's a living protest against the four-state, $3.8 billion pipeline. The Corps cited North Dakota's oncoming winter and increasingly contentious clashes between water protectors and the police. Since August, more than 525 people from throughout the country have been arrested, and on Sunday, November 20th, at Standing Rock, unarmed, peaceful water protectors were hosed down in sub-freezing weather, shot at with rubber bullets, gassed and maced. 21-year-old New York activist Sophia Fulensky was first hit with rubber bullets and then hit with a grenade that took off most of the undersurface of her left arm. Ivan Looking Horse, a member of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe, is on the ground at the Ocheti Shekoni camp. He says despite the order to evacuate, water protectors are staying. He says about 10,000 people are at the camp now.
And in the next few days, we also have clergy that is coming in. And the veterans of the United States are coming in also. So that last count was about 5,000 of them are coming in.
Looking Horse says the Energy Transfer Partners Project completion deadline is approaching.
So we're trying not to let them get to those deadlines so that the people that are called the shippers for the Dakota Access Pipeline, they have a deadline of December 31st where they want to see oil pumped to their area so they can ship it overseas. That's something that is, if they lose that connection, a lot of their finances will be down. And people all over the world are working on the banks to disenroll from the membership of their banks so that they are going financially broke. And well, things are happening from the people that care about their water and their environment over the world in this area.
Is there presently work on the pipeline going on, or have they stopped?
Oh, yeah. They have never stopped working. You know, they've been working every chance they get 24/7. They have their area fortressed in, you know. You can't get in there. They have Constantino wire with the, they use the militarized system of protecting their area, and they have a huge police force, the sheriffs, the DAPO security, which is made up mostly of mercenaries, high-tech equipment. They have helicopters and planes and in the area, and a revolvement of sheriffs, maybe 30 to 50 convoys at a time.
And is it true that they've basically kind of scrambled up phone reception, made it worse at camp, at the Ocheti Shekoni camp, where I know it's difficult a lot of times to get through to people and way difficult to get Wi-Fi signals?
Yeah, they're pretty well connected in the world as far as high tech. And
yeah.
So they scramble Facebook. They block out phone and they scramble anything they need to, the frequencies, and and when it comes time for them to move onto the protesters, they use sound cannons, which are pretty bad for the when the frequencies hit the body, they can knock out organs inside the body. So some of our elders and people that have pacemakers, you know, they can stop their hearts and stuff like that there. So
Ivan Looking Horse is on the ground at Ocheti Shikoni Camp. And he says what's being done is pretty wicked and that chemical weapons have been used against the water protectors. Earth Mom for WBAI News, New York.
And finally, in local news, Ben Max of Gotham Gazette has this look ahead in New York politics.
Locally, it's Mayor Bill de Blasio who's a focus of attention as just before the Thanksgiving holiday, his office, in a classic news dump fashion, released hundreds of emails involving de Blasio and an outside consultant, Jonathan Rosen, who worked on the mayor's election campaign in 2013 and has remained an informal advisor to the mayor. De Blasio and the city have sought to shield communications between the mayor, his aides, and Rosen on grounds that he is an informal advisor and therefore an extension of City Hall, and the communications are therefore protected from Freedom of Information Law requests. The mayor is being sued over the communications by New York One and the New York Post, and on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, his office released a big batch of emails that show some of the communication between City Hall and the outside consultant. Meanwhile, there's a lot going on around the city in this first week after Thanksgiving. The city council has a very busy week, including one of its two full-body stated meetings of the month, where bills that have passed through committee are voted on by the full council, and new bills are introduced to the council. That will take place on Tuesday at City Hall. Meanwhile, to start the week on Monday, the city council already had committee hearings to look at emissions from power plants in the Committee on Environmental Protection, and an oversight hearing on the city bike program in New York City and ideas for expanding it to all five boroughs. Also this week, the Working Families Party is joining other activists and organizing people to take two major actions in New York City and the surrounding area on Tuesday evening in what is a continuation of the Fight for 15 minimum wage and higher wage push. There are also panel discussions and other events focused on zoning, school integration, transportation, and other issues around the city this week. We have a full rundown at Gotham Gazette. For WBAI, this is Ben Max.
And that's the WBAI Evening News for Monday, November 28th, 2016. The news was produced with Sally O'Brien, Margaret Gilpin, Ron Daniels, Earth Mum, Ben Max, and Reggie Johnson. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.
My name is Fernando Gonzalez Jordi. I'm one of the Cuban Five, the five Cubans that were imprisoned in the United States for longer than 16 years, and the last three of us that were sent back to Cuba as part of the negotiations between the Cuban government and the U.S. administration. And I'm listening to WBAI in New York.